We're beginning the fifth perek of Brachos on page 114 in Ein Yaakov, Os Pei Aleph. Mishnah starts off, Ein Omnim Lispal Ela Mitoch Kovod Rosh. When you stand to daven, and as usual in Gemara terminology, Tefillah Lispal means specifically Shemana Esrei, you should only do it with a sense of Kovod Rosh. So Rashi defines Kovod Rosh as Hachna, as a sense of subjugation, of humility before Hashem. There is also an explanation Eitz Yosef brings from Rabbeinu Yonah on the Rif that what it means is that a person has to be be'emo v'achna, but also there are mefoshim who explain that it means literally that the person should have his head bowed downward while he's davening Shemoneh Esrei. There is an explanation from the Mezritch Magid, which is brought in many later Maimonides Chassidus, that on a deeper level, Kovod Rosh means that you should feel the pain of the fact that the Rosh, the Shechina, is in Golos, and daven with that mentality in mind. In Tanya of today, was it? No.
You have to understand what you're davening.
Yeah, but that's okay, only very loosely. That's going to be more, we're going to talk later with Tzoshin Chavinus Libo, Lashamayim, that's going to be more relevant to that. To Kovod Rosh, I mean, we're not really, that's it, not, yeah. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Chassidim are Rishonim who Yishoyin Shara Achas Mispalim. The Uli Chassidim used to wait an hour before they would daven Shemana Esrei, Kadeshi Chavnu Libam Laviyam Shabashmaim, so that they would be Machavim their hearts to their Father in heaven, to Hashem. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah explains that many times in the Gemara, when we use the word Shah, doesn't necessarily literally mean an hour. Often the Gemara uses the word Shah to mean a certain interval of time. Like when you have the expression yesh kona ilamo, the shah achas doesn't mean a dafka an hour of 60 minutes. It just means a certain moment in time. Here, later on, the Gemara is going to bring, we're going to have later on in the parak, that the Chassidim HaRishonim would actually spend an hour before Shemana Esrei thinking about the greatness of the Eidishter, then an hour davening Shemana Esrei, and then an hour to unwind after that. So literally the Gemara ends up saying they would spend 9 hours a day on their tefillahs. We'll get into that later on in the parak. So therefore, evidently, Shah here, Rabbeinu Yonah says, means literally an hour. With that said, I mean, on the one hand, we're not capable of that. I mean, we have jobs, we have other things, to do. So for us, Shah doesn't necessarily mean an hour per se. Although when you get down to it, I mean, when you consider the amount of time that it takes for Pesukah de Zimra, and then Shema, and it's brachos, you're not quite, it's nowhere near an hour, of course, but it's still a generous amount of time. The Alter Rebbe actually mentions someplace in Tanya, I think it's at the end of Kuntas Achron, and I think he says that ideally weekday davening should take an hour and a half. Lamaisa, you know, nobody holds by that now. Nobody's holding on that level now. Anyway, and Shulchan Aruch does mention the absolute minimum for this Shah Achas should be the amount of time it takes to walk 8 Tvachim. Earlier in the Masechta, we had the concept where the Gemara had said that a person should go in Shir Shnei Psachim, the shear of two entrances before he davens Shemana Esrei, and one meaning of that is in time, the time it takes to walk through two entrances, which would be 8 tefachim. In other words, don't just, you come into shul and right away you start davening Shemana Esrei, you give a few seconds to compose yourself. No, we're talking about these Chassidim HaRishonim, the hour itself would, part of it would include the time for Pesukah de Zimra and the time for whatever. And then after that, then they're in a frame of mind for that. Okay. So till then, yeah, till Shemana Esrei, it took them an hour, exactly. Yeah. So the Gemara continues. As I said, the Gemara starts off. Menohani mili. How do we know this that we're saying that you have to daven with Kovod Rosh? Omer Abalazar de Omer Kro, because you have a pasuk by Chana. And we're going to learn later on in the parak that we learn a lot of basic dinim of tefillah we learn from Chana's tefillah. And the pasuk says, on her vihi moras nafesh, she was bitter in heart, but bitter in spirit, but tispalel, and so she davened. So the Gemara says, how is that a proof? Mimai, who says that's a valid proof? Dilma shiny chana, v'dilma shiny chana dehava, so demirir liba tova. Chana was very bitter of spirit because she had spent almost 20 years childless. So Maharsha explained. Now, we do learn many dinim of tefillah from her. However, this particular detail about Kovad Rosh, since the Pasuk makes a point of saying Vehi Moras Nafesh, then maybe it means that was something special to her. Not necessarily does the average person, is the average person expected to feel that kind of meruz. Ela Amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Mehacha. Vani Baroi Chastacha Ove Besecha. Dovra Malach says in Tillim, I, through your great chesed, will come into your house. Eshtachva Elhecha Kodricha B'yirasecha. I will bow to your holy palace in your fear. So we see, in other words, that you have to be davening with a sense of fear and achna towards Hashem. But the Gemara says that's not a valid proof either. Umimai, the Duma David Shiny, to have a Mitzayon Nafshi Barachli Tova. Maybe David HaMelech was actually, he was taking extra time. He was a chassid, you know, so he had extra midas chassidus. So he was troubling himself more and putting himself more in a sense of merus. He himself says himself in a different pasuk, chassidani. He himself in this pasuk says va'ani b'roiv chastecha, implying that this is his own personal hanhaga, not necessarily that it's meant for everybody else. Ela amar Rabbi Shor ben Levi mehach. So rather, Rabbi Shor ben Levi says we can learn it for everybody from here. The pasuk says, "Hishtach will Hashem b'hadras kodesh, bow to Hashem in the glory of holiness." So al tikru b'hadras kodesh ela b'cherdas kodesh. Don't read the word b'hadras with the glory, but rather b'cherdas, which means with the trembling of holiness. Now the Tosfos is not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos points out that now you have those two places in Tillim where it says this expression, Ishtach Vol Hashem Bahadras Kodesh. One of them is in Kapitel Choftes, the other one is in Kapitel Tzadik Vav, and afterward it says Chilo Mipanov Kol Haaretz. So why does the Gemara, leaving aside the Kriyuksiv, the Gemara is going to end up schlugging it up and saying that maybe Hadras Kodesh means exactly what it sounds like, beauty, that a person should dress nicely to daven. But why doesn't the Gemara bring from the other pasuk Chilul Hashem Kol Haaretz, where we see clearly that a person should tremble before Hashem? So Tosfos gives the answer because the Gemara wants to bring a proof from Kapitel Choftes, because we just learned yesterday that's where the Chachamim learned the number of brachas in Shemoneh Esrei is based on the number of names of Havaya, and then the names of Havaya and one name Keil HaKavod Hirim that are in that capital. So therefore the Gemara wants to bring something from that capital to show the mentality that you have to daven with. Then Maharsha points out a different point as well. In the one in Kapitel Tzadik Vav where it says Ishtach Vol Hashem Bahadras Kodesh Chilu Mipanov Kol Haaretz, in context that pasuk is talking about coming to the Beis Hamikdash. That pasuk is talking about all the nations in the world coming to the Beis Hamikdash and offering korbanos, where after all goyim can do that as well. Where do we have a proof that such a thing should apply when you're davening three times a day in shul? So for that you need a different pasuk. For that you need the one from Kapitel Choftes Havol Hashem Bnei Elim, which is, as Tosfos says, referring to the daily davening. So therefore, if it says Bahadras Kodesh and we darshin al tikri Bahadras ela b'cherdas, then there we go. But the Gemara says Mimai, who says that that's a valid proof? Dumala olam emalach hadras mamish. Maybe in fact you should don't do the kriyuksiv. Just explain that it means hadras in the simple sense, the beauty of holiness, meaning kihod Rabbi Yehuda, as we find for example of what Rabbi Yehuda did. Mitzayin nafshe, he would dress himself up in his nice clothes, and then b'hodem matzli, and only then would he daven. So maybe that's what it means. When you're bowing and davening to Hashem, do it with beauty, do it wearing nice clothing. So there's still no proof from there about the Kovad Rosh. Rather, we can learn from a different pasuk, says from Nachum Yitzchok, Ivdu as Hashem b'yira, fear Hashem, serve Hashem with fear, which Rashi points out, that tefillah is in place of avodah. So therefore, do that with fear. V'gilu bir'odah. And rejoice with trembling. So Rashi points out that the tefillah is instead of avodah. Maharsha points out when you get down to it, tefillah itself is avodah. But after all, here when we say Ivdu as Hashem b'yira, it would mean, if we didn't say that it was about davening, we would say that it means primarily the korbanos. The korbanos were b'yira, yeah. Well, first of all, Maharsha points out there's a loshen that you have in Nusach Ashkenaz of Ritzei on days when they duchen, they have a different Nusach of the bracha ritze, and you have the line over there, "Shom na'avodcha b'yira kimei olam achshanim kadmonius." So there you go. Na'avodcha is going to be b'yira, v'shom over there in Yerushalayim when we're able to bring the korbanos again. So we see that there's a yira involved with it. There is, I mean, in Chassidus, it talks about the idea that, you know, unlike the avoda of the Levim, which was very noisy and, you know, and playing instruments and all the koinims, avoda was very silent. Which that itself is an aspect of Yira, that they don't even have, they have such bittul towards Elikos that they're not even speaking during the Avodah, they're just doing it in complete silence. Right. Well, so that's so that's Eitz Yosef brings at the beginning that it means that since the head is the main one of the Evarim, when a person feels that his head is heavy than everything else, he automatically feels Achna, the same way a person needs to be sitting the Emo of Achna. It is an interesting lesson. Maybe that's what caused the Mizrach Magid to say the explanation that on the deeper level it means to daven about the Golus Hashchina. So Ivdu as Hashem B'yira, so we see then that Ivdu, so according to Rashi, Ivdu means primarily the Korbanos, and then since we don't have the Korbanos, then davening is a substitute for it. And Marusha is adding the point that we see in fact from the Nusach of davening that Avodah of Korbanos is associated more with Yira. So there you go. So you have to have Yira. There is actually a Sicha in Chelek Lama Dalad for Parshas Ekev, where the Rebbe analyzes the Gemara in some detail, and also compares and contrasts it with the Yerushalmi over here also that discusses this the source for this idea of Einoim Nimlei Spalel Metech Kovid Rosh. So here the Gemara has brought several different psukim. The question is, why do we need to wait for Rav Nachman Yitzchok to come up with the most obvious one, Ivdu as Hashem Meira? Why do we first need to have, first we needed to bring from Chana and from David, and Ishtachlo Hashem Behadras Kodesh, and make a Kriyuk Siv out of it, and only then, finally, Rav Nachman Yitzchok comes up with the most obvious one? Why didn't the Gemara go to that one straight first? And also here in our Gemara, in the Bavli over here, the Gemara tries Behadras Kodesh and the Kriyuk Siv, and then shoots it down, whereas in the Yerushalmi, it does end up learning it from that. So there's a whole Sicha where the Rebbe analyzes in detail that there are different levels of Yira, that when it comes to davening, maybe that also answers the question why Davka Veloshen Kovid Rosh. I mean, in that Sicha, the Rebbe does also bring that line from the Mizrach Magid about the deeper meaning of Kovid Rosh. So the idea being, in other words, that first the Gemara was trying to say, for example, that it's good enough. So just the person is feeling bitter. Now, in the case of Chana, her bitterness had nothing to do particularly with bittul towards the Eved. She was bitter over her circumstances. 20 years, she's childless, and Penina is always harassing. Nevertheless, the Gemara thought that might still be, that does lead a person to Achna, al-derech like what the Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya, that for example, you have a person may be in a bad mood because of something that's something untoward that happened to him, and they redirect that towards Merirus over where they're holding Beruchnius. But then the Gemara says that's not the fullness of the kind of Yira, of the kind of Kovid Rosh that we're talking about. And then the Gemara goes through, and the Rebbe makes a number of interesting points in the Sicha over there. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Nachman Yitzchok, in fact, we find in other Gemaras have different attitudes towards what's the highest level of Yira of the Eibishter. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, among other things, went into Gan Eden alive. Showing what level he's on. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says at the end of Soita, when it says in the Mishnah over there that Mishemesu Rebbe Botla Anova Yirashet, he says Lo Tisni Yirashet to Ikano, don't say that Yirashet is gone because I'm still around. And he had a tremendous level of Yirashet. So therefore, each one of them is going Lushitosa about where we learn the concept of Yirashet and davening from. And then the Rebbe also talks about the idea that that Bovel, being on a lower ruchniistic level than Eretz Yisrael, then they couldn't achieve what the Bavli is telling us. You can't really achieve the Behadras Kodesh, Becherdas Kodesh, and therefore you need a different pasuk. Whereas the Yerushalmi, being on a higher level, being Todas Eretz Yisrael, is able to stick with that one. So it's a whole long, interesting sicha with lomdus and all, and all kinds of other interesting things in it. Chelik Lamed Daled.
I'll say that the whole purpose was Shechavim of Avim Shiva Shemayim, right? Right. Wasn't it about fear? Wasn't it about Chadodah? Wasn't it about...
That was the hour that the Chassidim of Rishonim did. Right. The hour was in order to get rid of, to get rid of the Tanuga Olam Hazeh from their minds, right.
The whole
That's also the COVID version. In other words, that they're concentrating on all of course rather than on things of other matter. Yeah. Okay.
Any serious thing you do in life, you have a COVID mushroom. Yeah. Are you thinking, making a big move?
Yeah.
Standing in that one mulaka was a COVID mushroom.
Yeah.
It's serious.
Yeah. So I mean seriousness, right?
It's fear, trembling, it's trepidation.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, there's many different, many different angles on. Many different angles of here. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My begilu bir order." What's this expression? And rejoice with trembling. Amar of Adar ba'avor ba'masna. Amar Rab b'mkoim gila shom tehera order means that in the place where you're being happy. In that place, you need to have ra'odah, the trembling in front of the Eibishter. In other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, you can't be overly a perug. Yid has to be besimcha, but you have to keep it within limits. It has to be simcha rather than holiness. So the Gemara gives some examples. Rabbi Yirmiyah have a Yosef Kameh de Rab or the Rab Zera. Rabbi Yirmiyah one time was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rab Zera. Chazia to have a Kabodach Tova. And Rab Zera, the Rebbe, saw that Rabbi Yirmiyah, the Talmud, was being excessively happy. And by the way, you find in other Gemaras, it says that Rab Zera was extra machmer on himself on this matter. The Gemara is going to quote soon in the line that also the Gemara mentions in other places that Rab Zera was extra careful with that inyan. The Gemara even mentions some, I think it's a nidder or something, that one time Rab Yirmiyah says to Rab Zera some kind of thing in halacha that seems that it could never happen. It would be the kind of thing that you'd often find. The Gemara says that the Amoraim would laugh about because it's so ridiculous to think of such a scenario happening, and still Rab Zera did not laugh. So he was very machmer on himself. So now when he sees Rab Yirmiyah is sitting there in a good mood, Amalei v'gilu b'radah k'siv. He says to him, what happened to v'gilu b'radah? Amalei, Rabbi Yirmiyah answers him, anot tefillin manachna. I am wearing tefillin. Now, how does that help? So there's a bunch of things. Hakosev explains that when he says, anot tefillin manachna, means that my simcha is a simcha of the mitzvah. And therefore, it's not a bad thing that you're thinking that you need the opposite. Adrav, a simcha shal mitzvah is a very good thing. There is also an explanation. Rabbeinu Yonah says that Rabbi Yirmiyah, we know that a cholam ayim, a person who's having intestinal troubles, is not allowed to wear tefillin. He's not going to be able to keep himself from having to go to the bathroom or pass gas or whatever. So now Rabbi Yirmiyah had spent a few days unable to put on tefillin. Now when he's able to for the first time in a few days, then he is in an extra good mood that he finally has the ability to do the mitzvah again. And then there were various other explanations, among them being the idea that what he's saying is, since I'm wearing tefillin, that itself is going to keep my simcha within bounds. There, the Rambam has an expression at the end of Hilchos Tefillin that when a person is wearing tefillin, then that itself has an effect on his mood and on his thoughts, that he doesn't go beyond bounds. So therefore, sort of Yirmiyah is saying, don't you worry, Rab Zera, that I might go beyond what I'm supposed to, since I'm wearing tefillin, that itself helps keep me in check. So that's the thing. So you have a few different explanations. Is it that he's happy that he's doing the mitzvah, or is it that he's happy and the mitzvah itself keeps his happiness to be in within bounds that it should be, rather than to go beyond? Similarly, the Gemara says, Abaya Abba Yosef Kameh Rabba. Abaya was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rabba. Chazia to have a Yosef a Kabodach Tova. Again, he saw that he was sitting and being very happy. Here it sounds like that it means that Abaya saw Rabba was being very happy because he says to him, Omaloy, lo sovel amar b'chol etzev yemoser. He says, Rebbe, don't you hold of the concept that the Pasuk says, in every sadness, there should be moser, which means there should be a moser means something extra, so meaning a schar. And the Alter Rebbe brings that in Perek Lamed Aleph of Tanya and explains the idea is Atzvos, we know, is a very bad thing. The point is, from the Atzvos comes the profit of Merirus, where then they lead the person to take an honest reckoning of where he's holding and to fix himself up and come to Simcha Shal Mitzvah. So therefore, that's the B'chol Atzev Yeh Moser. So Abaya is saying to Rabba, don't you hold that possible? And in fact, the Maharal says in Netzach Yisrael, he has a long explanation of this whole Indian of Kovid Rosh and going through this Gemara in detail. One thing he points out, in the first part, you had Reb Zera, the Rebbe, is speaking to Reb Yirmiyah, the Talmud. Therefore, he uses one expression, the Gilu Berada. Now here it's the other way around. Abaya, here it's the other way around. Abaya is speaking to his Rebbe, Rabba, so therefore he doesn't use the expression the Gilu Berada, rather he uses a different expression which is more respectful and more appropriate to the situation. And again, Amalei, I'm not tefillin manachna. And again, he answered that I'm wearing tefillin. So the same idea, either that it's his first time in a few days that he's able to, or just that he's bechlal, happy with the simcha, the mitzvah, etc. So the point is, in other words, this was a side thing. Once we mentioned the pasuk Ivdu as Hashem Yira, then the Gemara needed to explain what is this Gilu Berada. The Rif over here has a very, very long explanation about it. It's a little hard to take one nekuda out of it. But one point is that he says that that if it was just a matter of so first of all, Tosfos actually explains the Pshut Shel Mikra is that Tosfos explains Pshut Shel Mikra of the two halves, how the two halves of the pasuk are going together are Ivdu Es Hashem Beira, and that way when the time of trembling comes, when it comes, when a person is in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, or when the person, or after, or when Mashiach comes and the whole world is being judged, then you'll be able to be happy because now you lived your life right because you were Ivdu Es Hashem Beira all this time. So Tosfos explains that's the pshat of it, and the Rif has a long explanation over here where one thing is if that's the case, then the pasuk should have said it the other way around. V'radu v'gila, why v'gilu v'rada, and that leads the Gemara into this drasha that it means even in Olam Hazeh, when a person is happy, there needs to be a certain order involved as well.
You see. So it's exactly opposite from Kovod Rosh.
So one second, we're gonna see soon that the Gemara is gonna mention that the Gemara is gonna actually mention soon, we're gonna have it now. A braisa that says that you're supposed to daven mitoch simcha shel mitzvah. So in fact, one explanation is that those two things go together. You have the simcha shel mitzvah together with Kovod Rosh. So in other words, you have the proper blend of hachna and then yira and everything in front of the Eibishter together with simcha shel mitzvah.
So it is connected.
That's the thing. So one way of understanding it is that in fact you need both. So the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan ein omnim lispal lo mitoch atzvos. When you stand up to daven, it shouldn't be that before that you were sad, so that you were lazy, or laughter, or stam casual conversation. Rashi says specifically letzonus, or lightheadedness. Rashi says here, kalus roish is the opposite of kovod roish. So kovod roish would mean being serious, kalus roish means the other way around. Now she says, Zachos Leiv Osok means like a person feeling very good, feeling very proud of himself and very high up. That would be Kalus Rosh. Kovod Rosh is the opposite. Again, like we said, a feeling of Achna, a feeling of that I am subject to the Eibishter. So a person shouldn't go to Davin Mitech Kalus Rosh, V'loi Mitech Dvorim B'Teilim, or from empty talk. Simcha Shal Mitzvah. Rather, a person should Shtel Zach to Davin from within a Simcha of Mitzvah. Rashi mentions that actually now, the Gemara is going to go on to say in a couple of lines, we're going to mention how the Nevi'im would end their Sfarim with words of Tanchumim. So Rashi says, davening is phrased the same thing as well. We have, right before Shemana Esrei, we mentioned the Geula from Mitzrayim, which puts us in a mood of Simcha Shal Mitzvah. Also, for example, before that, we have Ashrei, where we have Psukim over there that stress how Hashem is close to those who fear him and do what he wants. Ritzon Yirev Yas, Hashem is Kaloy Abav. Rashi gives another example in Nusach Ashkenaz when they say Baruch Hashem La'olam before Shemana Esrei of Ma'ariv. So you have Psukim towards the end over there that stress Kilo Yitesh Hashem as Amo, that Hashem will never abandon His people. So those kinds of things put up those kinds of Psukim and those kinds of topics put a person in a frame of mind of Simcha Shel Mitzvah. And the Gemara continues, the same way a person should not take leave of another person, not from stam casual conversation, and not from laughter, or again from kalos roish of feeling very lightheaded and proud of himself, or from dvarim b'teilim, elamitech dvar halacha. Rather, when one person is taking leave of another, the last thing they should be saying is they should be involved in a dvar halacha. Shekein matzinu b'neviim arishonim, because the dvar halacha again puts a person in a frame of mind of simcha shel mitzvah. Shekein Matsinim and Neviim Arishonim, as in fact we find by the Urdu Neviim. Now we use, Maharsha points out, we use the word Neviim Rishonim to mean the first four Sfarim of Neviim, Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim. Maharsha says that's not what we mean over here. In fact, those don't particularly end with Divrei Shvach V'Tanchumim. What we mean is Neviim Rishonim, we just mean the Neviim of earlier times, meaning we're not even contrasting the Neviim of the first Beis HaMikdash with the ones Chagas, Zechariah, and Malachi from the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. We're just contrasting the Neviim of olden times, and that's what we mean by Neviim Rishonim. So we find that they ended their Sfarim, Shesimu Divrem, Vidiva Shvach B'Tanchumim. Even if you'd have a sefer of theirs that's the voice of trouble and disaster and punishment and so forth, they would always make sure to end with words of praise and comfort towards the Jewish people. So in fact, Tosfos points out, and Maharsha discusses over here, based on Yerushalmi, there seem to be some exceptions to that. One interesting exception that the Yerushalmi mentions is Sefer Yirmiyah. The last psuk of it, the last parak of it, recaps the events of the Churban. It finishes off with Yehoyachin being let out of jail, fine, but it finishes off. The last pasuk over there is that Evel Meroidach, the king of Babel, is giving him his food every day. That's an appropriate way to end the sefer on a note like that. What happened to Divrei Shvach V'Tanchumim? So the Yerushalmi explains, if you look at the previous perek of Yirmiyah, actually, the previous perek, perek Nun Aleph, is a long nevuah against Babel, how Babel is going to be completely destroyed and never rise again. And it finishes off with those kochat tishka Babel le'sokum, and then ad heina divrei Yirmiyah. This is as far as Yirmiyahu said. In other words, the Sefer essentially ends with Tanchumen for the Jewish people. When we see how the Eveshtip punishes Bavel, that's Tanchumen for us. Maharsha goes on to mention that there are in fact four Sfarim in Tanakh that end on not such a good note. And in fact, you have a simon for them that you find in some Chumashim, Yud Tov Kuf. Yeshaya, the last pasuk of it, ends off with V'hoyu Deiroin Lachol Basar. So in fact, when we lay it on Shabbos or Shchodesh, we repeat the next to last pasuk, V'hoyu Midechodesh B'chodshei, to end on a good note. Trey also ends with Pen Ovevi Kesiyas Oretz Cherem, the last words of Malachi. Again, when we lay it on Erev Pesach Shechalias B'Shabbos, we repeat the next to last pasuk, Hinei Anochi Shaleach Lachem Eisei L'Yahr Novi. The same way with Kehelas, and the same way with Kinos, which is Eicha, finishes off. So you seem to have exceptions to this rule that the Gemara is saying. So the Yerushalmi addresses some of them. The one with Yeshaya, where it finishes off, it explains, again, that's talking about the punishment of the Goyim. So therefore, again, that's not, so it's ending off in a certain sense with Nechama for us, that we'll get to see the Rishoyim of the Goyim have their eternal punishment. Nevertheless, when we're laning it, and sure, we still read the next to last pasuk in order not to end off on a note that doesn't sound so good. Misayim b'toyv, right. So in other words, what the Yerushalmi is saying is essentially he was Misayim b'toyv in the sense that he's being Misayim with punishment of the Goyim. Nevertheless, though, and still, and sure, we take the extra step and repeat the next to last pasuk. So yeah, that's v'hoyu deiroin l'chol v'yotze v'ro v'figurei ha'anashim ha'poshim bi. When it says v'hoyu deiroin l'chol baser, means that all flesh, everybody who was alive at that time, will see how disgusting they are. The bodies of the goyim that are being burnt and then consumed by worms and whatever forever. With Eicha, similarly, the Yerushalmi says that the pasuk Ki Mois Ma'astonu, essentially what it means is Hashem Hashiveinu Hashem Elach B'Nashuva, because Ki Mois Ma'astonu. So therefore, again, in a certain sense, it's ending on a good note, because you treated us so badly, therefore Hashiveinu. So it's really also ending on a good note. Again, nevertheless, when we lay in on Tisha B'Av, we still repeat the next to last pasuk in order not to go in with such limudim. And with Eicha, the last pasuk. So we repeat the pasuk Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha, which is the next to last pasuk. We repeat it after we say the last pasuk. But since the last pasuk ends off on seemingly not such a happy note, then therefore we repeat the next to last pasuk. So each of these, so each of these has their reason why it's written that way. Okay. So that's what we're saying, that the Nevi'im would end with Divrei Shvach v'Tanchumim, and therefore, by the same token, when you're going to daven, it should be out of a sense of Shvach v'Tanchumim, and therefore, that's why you have these psukim and these topics that we do before Shemoneh Esrei. And the same thing, when a person is taking leave of somebody else, it should be Metoch Dvar Halof. And the Gemara says similarly, V'chein toni mori bar breder upon a breder of Yemei Ba'aba. A person should not take leave of another person only from within they've been talking about a word of halacha. That way he will remember. That way he will remember him, or he will remember it. Now you actually have different understandings among the Mefarshim. What does zechrehu mean? Does it mean this way you'll remember the other person? Marsha, for example, says that Marsha says actually what it means is when you say it var halacha, that will cause shemitoch kach zechrehu, that will help your friend in turn to remember some previous var halacha that he heard, and he'll be able to say it over, as the Gemara is now going to give us an example. Similarly, Iyun Yaakov also said that it means that this way you will remember the halacha, because you'll remember that you discussed it under these circumstances. With that said, other Mefarshim explain that it means Shemitech Kach Zechrehu, this way you will remember the other person. There are a number of Maimorim from the Friedrich Rebbe and from our Rebbe that talk about different angles on this, one idea being Dvar Halacha. We know from Tanya, from Igeres HaKodesh, it was not long ago in the Daily Tanya, that halachas are more than anything else the expression of the Ratzon HaElyon. And therefore, when you potter Adam HaChaveira, it also reflects the way that the Neshama, to begin with, comes down from Chaveira, from the Eibishter, from Tachas Kisei HaKavod, down here to earth. So when you associate it with a Dvar Halacha, with the Ratzon HaElyon, then it causes, it brings about that you have a deeper connection between the neshama and the Eivishtin, between one neshama and another. And the Gemara tells, there's a line someplace in Hayom Yom that says that Dvar Halacha also means a dover that makes the other person into a mahalath, something that helps the person be able to walk and be able to increase in their connection with the Eivishtin. So the Gemara says, Kihodir of Kahana. We have an example of this, of that you should be parting with a Dvar Halacha. We have the example that Rav Kahana Alviel of Shimi Ba'ashi Pumnara at Beit Sinisa de Babel. One time Rav Kahana accompanied Rav Shimi Ba'ashi from Pumnara, which was one of the cities in Babel. There was a large yeshiva over there, until an area in Babel that was called Beit Sinisa. Sinisa Rashi translates means palm trees. Beit Sinisa de Babel was an area in Babel where a lot of palm trees grew. B'chlal, Babel has a lot of palm trees. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, that's one reason why the Eved depicted it as the country that the Jewish people should be sent into Golus for at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, because there were a lot of date palms over there, and dates are very cheap and nourishing, and that way they would be able to eat dates and be able to live very cheaply and have lots of time for learning Torah. But this particular area, this Beit Sinisa de Babel, had an extra large number of palm trees. There are Mephoshim who explain actually that particularly Sinisa means palm trees where the fruit of them is not very good to eat. Rashi, I think himself, explains elsewhere that what it means is that the water, the river that ran near these palm trees, the water in it was very bitter, therefore the dates weren't very good to eat. But nevertheless, so you had a large number of these palm trees there. Anyway, Kimatalahasim, when they got to that area, Omale Mar. So one of them says to the other, the Pashtus Rav Shimi Ba'ashi was the Rebbe, and Rav Kahana is the Talmud. So the Pashtus Rav Kahana is asking Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, Vade de Amri Inchi, is it true this that people say, Hanit Sinisa de Babel, these palm trees in Babel, Isnuma Odomarishan Vadashta, these palm trees have existed over here ever since the times of Odomarishan. So Rav Shimi Ba'ashi says, actually, by you saying that, you've reminded me of something that Rav Yosi Ben Chanina said. So here we have an example of what Marasha is saying, that Rav Kahana had said one thing, and that reminded Rav Shimi Ba'ashi of a different vort in Torah. The vort is, the Navi is telling the Jewish people, remember the chesed the Eved did for you. He took you through the Midbar and provided you with everything you need, where this is a land where no man ever crossed through it, and no person ever settled there. So you have to ask, why the double expression? If nobody actually passed through there, how could they have settled over there? So why the double expression? Ela lo malach, rather, the pasuk is coming to tell you, kol eretz shegazer alei adam rishon liyishuv, any place that adam rishon decided in his time should be settled, nisyashva, then it ended up being settled. V'chol eretz shelo gazer alei adam rishon liyishuv lo nisyashva. Any place where Adam decided to begin with that this place should not be settled remained unsettled. So in other words, the point is, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi is telling Rav Kahana, people say that these palm trees are here since the times of Adam Rishon. Not quite. It's not that the actual trees themselves are now 4,000 years old or however long it was. Rather, this place back 4,000 years ago, Adam Rishon decided that this place should be a place of palm trees, and therefore that's what it remained from then until now. The actual trees over here are not quite that old. So now, how is that a dvar halacha? So on one level, some approaches say that, okay, dvar halacha doesn't exactly have to mean a matter literally of halacha as in something you'd find in Shulchan Aruch. It can mean a clear statement in Torah like that. With that said, there are mefarshim, there are achronim who find different naftaminis lahalacha in it. One of them being the question: would it be appropriate to use lulavim from these trees on Sukkot? If you say the trees themselves are 4,000 years old, so already maybe it's not so mahuder to take lulavim from them. Mashenkin, if you said, so that was what Rav Kahana is asking, and Rav Shimi Ba'ashi is telling him, don't you worry, the trees themselves are not actually that old. It's only that the Adam Rishon decided thousands of years ago that this should be a place of palm trees, but gesunta heit, you can use the lulavim from these trees like you would any other lulavim. In a couple of those maimorim, there's an explanation that in one of those maimorim that there are several maimorim from the Friedrich Rebbe and from our Rebbe that begin with this line Ayupato Adam Mechaveri, that were, you know, naturally the time to say such maimorim would be when you're taking leave. For example, the Friedrich Rebbe said such a maimor when he was leaving out to Cyril at the end of his trip there in Tafresh Peites. The Rebbe said maimorim beginning with that Dibra Masko a couple of times, for example, when Shluchim were traveling overseas or different other ones. So different explanations at different times, one of them being that Adam Rishon over here represents Machshavak Duma De'ak. So it represents the Eibishter's primordial thought of what an Neshama is coming down to earth for and what it's meant to accomplish. And therefore we're saying that was already predetermined thousands of years ago. And therefore the Eibishter is now sending you to this place in order to accomplish whatever it is that the Eibishter decided thousands of years ago needs to be accomplished over here. As we know, any number of stories involving the Baal Shem Tov and the Rebbe Rashab and various other Rebbeim that express that idea, that this particular place has been waiting 5,500 or 5,600 or whatever it is years, and however many minutes and hours, et cetera, until the Yid comes over there and does that avoda. So that's what it means on one level. And then on another level, it's that we do actually mean Adam Rishon himself, the actual historical Adam Rishon, but he was the representative in his time of the Eibishter's Ratzon in the world, and therefore he determined what should be within limits and off limits for a Yid to do his avoda with. What's within Klipas Noga versus within Sholosh Klipas Hatmeis? What's available for our Asei Tov? What has to be kept away with? The Sur Meira, and therefore in that sense, that's a Dvar Halacha that it tells you, it gives you an idea what your area of avoda is to work on. The middle letters of Dvar and Halacha, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Lamed Chav. Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay. Very nice. Yeah. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Go'olach, Ches Chesven. The Rebbe was talking in the beginning of it, the beginning of Nun Aleph, that at that point, the Soviet Union was in the process of collapsing and hundreds of thousands of Jews were leaving Russia for freedom and having an opportunity to come closer to Shemitah HaMitzvahs. So the Rebbe talked about that as a me'ein and a dogma and a preparation for the kibbutz galias of Yemos HaMashiach and the full fulfillment of Kohol Godu Yeshu Rehena. The pasuk specifically associated with Hakel, so very appropriate to talk about it now. That year was also a year of Hakel, come to think of it. No, it wasn't actually. No, I take that back. No, Aleph wasn't a year of Hakel, but no. This is an example that ever said of Tayyamah Chaim Zohar, that we get a tape, we get a foretaste of Mashiach's times before it actually happens. Yeah, by now we've been tasting it for quite a while. Yeah, that's true. We're up to Simon Mem Tess in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. That is the dinim of the brachas on wine and the bracha of Atova Metiv. I'm actually not sure. I think we're going to probably skip around parts of it because realistically, how many people drink wine outside of Kiddush and Abdullah now, anyhow? And when you make Kiddush or Havdalah, then you have different dinim. So let's just mention one halacha he mentions over here. If wine is diluted with water, so if the wine is only 1/6 of the mixture, then even though it still tastes like wine, it's still considered water, and you wouldn't make bo'ri agafah on it. If there's more wine than 1/6, if that is the local minig to mix it that much, then you would still say agefen, and then you'd still say bo'ri agafah and al agefen, and if not, then bo'ri daita. Lamaisa, a lot of wines nowadays are actually made with water mixed in when they first make them. There is some discussion among the post machronim whether that water that's mixed into it counts towards this 1/6 that we're talking about, or maybe not, since it's put in when the wine is actually being made and fermented or whatever, and maybe therefore it has the actual din of the wine itself.